So we've already been given lots to think about today, about how we are church together, what that looks like, whether that's at the national level as we think about future directions and how we organize ourselves to be church at that level, the regional level as MCEC, Mennonite Church Eastern Canada, or thinking about all of us as individual congregations who make up MCEC and make up MC Canada, including those who are just joining us as emerging churches or full churches. In our cluster, we're part of the Niagara Cluster. One church that has become an emerging church is Westview Church in St. Catharines. So I've been getting to know their leaders at our monthly pastor cluster meetings. So I think that all of that is important context as we focus our thoughts for just a few minutes on the second part of John 14. Last Sunday, in the first part of John 14, Jesus reassured us that there is lots of space for all who are seeking to be at home with God. And Jesus said that those who followed him would do even greater works than what they had seen Jesus do at that point. He promised, "If in my name you ask me for anything, I will do it." And then Jesus moved into a new theme. We're not at Pentecost yet in the church year, but as we come to the end, toward the end of the Easter season, this is our first glimpse of the promise of the Spirit. Jesus told his disciples that God would send them another advocate, counselor, helper, comforter, depending on your translation. In Greek, a paraclete. Paracletes. Translated literally, someone called to the side of. To interpret that a little further, someone whose job it is to stay beside you. Someone who won't stand at a distance wondering what you'll do for yourself. Someone who will be beside you so they're facing the same direction you are, looking the same problem head on, or being in awe of the same wondrous experience that you are. A paraclete, someone called alongside. And Jesus said, "This paraclete will be with you forever." My pair of cleats has not been with me forever. But it does keep surprising me by showing up every year and being ready to go with me. Last Monday, I got ready for my first Ultimate Frisbee game of the season, and I thought, oh no, I really ran my cleats into the ground last summer, and now I've ignored them all year long. Surely I won't be able to play in them. I don't even remember where I kept them all through the winter. But they were right where I first looked, and I pulled them out, and what do you know, they're as ready as I am to go for a new season. Or as I ended up feeling on Tuesday and Wednesday, they're even more ready than I am for a new season. So my pair of cleats came alongside me. And I could get by without them, but now that I know what it's like to play with cleats, I don't want to do it without. My cleats keep me more secure on the grassy fields that can be sometimes wet and sometimes uneven. They carry me toward my goal and make quicker stops and sharp turns possible if I suddenly discover that the Frisbee is no longer going where I thought it was going. If I wore my hiking boots, my feet would be heavy and slower than they already are, but my cleats make me feel fleet of foot. If I wore my sandals, my toes would be stubbed or stepped on within 5 minutes, but my cleats keep my feet protected. As a teen who was always on the outside of the sporty crowd, and therefore in my high school, the more popular crowd, my cleats give me confidence in my identity as part of a team and part of a bigger community of ultimate players. Now, my pair of cleats doesn't stop me from making mistakes. I've still got to practice catching that disc after the winter has made me rusty. And speaking of the Spirit of Truth, as Jesus names it, my cleats are the first sign of whether I've stepped out of bounds. If I catch a disc while my feet are on or outside the line, my play is no good. So my cleats keep me honest and challenge me to be a stronger player. Jesus promises his disciples a paraclete, an advocate, a counselor, a helper, a comforter, who will be called to their side and go alongside them. Jesus promises them the Spirit of truth, who not everyone will know, because not everyone is looking for it. But Jesus promises the disciples that they will know the Spirit, because it will be even closer than a pair of cleats. This advocate abides with you and will be in you or among you. It's an interesting little distinction. That little Greek word for in could be in an individual or in as a collective sense. You will know the Spirit because it dwells, abides within you, and you will know the Spirit as you recognize it abiding among you, holding your community together, keeping it secure, and giving vision for its goals, guiding stops and sharp turns when necessary, keeping the community honest and challenging it to grow. And in this Spirit, we find our shared identity as children of God. I will not leave you orphaned, Jesus says. I am coming to you. In a little while, the world will no longer see me, but you will see me. Because I live, you also will live. This paraclete, this advocate, will come to our side even when others are unaware. Even when others judge us, even when others tell us we don't belong in the community, even when we see something deeper at work than what the world recognizes. Those are the moments when others need our help to see the Spirit. The world will no longer see me, but you will see me, Jesus said. Paul seemed to take this to heart when he visited Athens, seeing all of those spiritual seekers throughout the city and the liberal philosophers who argued with logic. You could hear in the translation that was used how often Paul turned to logic, which is something they would listen to. And they deigned to listen to this babbler, as they call him, who seems to speak of foreign deities. Paul uses his best rhetorical flourishes to try to convince the Athenians that the God that they don't know is actually the one and only God that Paul does know and has come to know more fully through Jesus. Paul quotes a poem that was actually written about Zeus that says, "In him we live and move and have our being." But he uses those familiar cultural words for his listeners to say, this is what is true of Yahweh. Though his listeners worship a whole pantheon of gods, Paul says, the God who made the world and everything in it is not far from each one of you. There is evidence of this God in your longings, a shrine to an unknown God, and in your art, this poetry that expresses a truth about God. The world will no longer see me, but you will see me, Jesus said. So if we are to do greater works than these, as Jesus said last week, like Paul, we are called to lend our eyes to a world that longs to see. The promise of the Spirit's presence shapes us for a paraclete kind of discipleship. To whose side might we be called? Who longs to see the Spirit of God in the world, but is troubled with clouded vision? How do we point Jesus out in ways that can be seen? As paraclete disciples, whom do we come alongside, standing in solidarity, not letting them be alone as the world shifts around them? How do we lend our vision for the goal at hand, or be the comforter or helper who makes someone more secure on shaky ground? Can we share grace that makes someone more fleet of foot for their journey, and not burden them with restrictive expectations that Jesus wants to lift from them? As Paraclete disciples, can we speak truth in love, not with an eagerness to put ourselves higher than the other, but rather so we can travel together in our shared identity as children of God? The world will no longer see me, but you will see me. And the world will see us. So will the world, in fact, see Jesus after all, as it sees the Spirit of truth abiding among and within us, the Spirit that advocates, counsels, comforts, and helps. Christ has no body here but ours, no hands, no feet here on earth but ours. Through our touch, our smile, our listening ear, embodied in us, Jesus is living here. May it be so.